The Vedantic tradition and Sri Ramana Maharshi. Swami Siddheshwarananda.
Ramakrishna Mission?
No, he was the head of the French branch of the Ramakrishna Mission.
In Chennai?
France.
Oh.
In Paris. I used to send people to Bhagavan. See, Ramana Maharshi represents the pure tradition in Advaita Vedanta. In this article, I propose to examine certain aspects of the life and teachings of Maharshi that have appealed to me as verification of Vedantic truth. In Vedanta, there is a theistic as well as a non-theistic tradition. And these refer to two aspects of reality. The first treats of saguna aspect of reality. The first treats of saguna or qualified Brahman. And the second of nirguna or unqualified Brahman. The Bhagavad Gita says, the path of the unconditioned is not for the aspirant who is still bound by the I am the body idea. Maharshi transcended the body idea on the very day he made the investigation into the nature of the self. His spiritual career is of particular interest to the student of Vedanta. For an example, like his is rare to find. He is one who acceded to the nirguna ideal without passing through the preliminary stages of discipline, where much importance is given to devotion and worship. In history, the most brilliant example of the same line of research and realization is that of Lord Buddha. Though he had to spend long years in meditation before he had the awakening, we are now above the prejudice handed down through the ages where Buddhism and Vedanta and their spiritual appeal were placed one against the other in unrelenting opposition. We now consider Lord Buddha as one of the continuators of the Vedantic tradition of the Upanishads, where the non-theistic ideal was lived and practiced. There are two Vedantic positions in conformity with two grades of seekers aspiring to know the one ultimate reality. The less capable consider Brahman as saguna. The higher one considers it as nirguna. The one is theological and the other philosophical. The two standpoints are not mutually exclusive, for the goal of the two methods is identical, namely to bring the aspirant to the realization of Brahman. When Maharshi made the investigation, who am I? He had not envisaged this technique or any other. He had not done any theological education. He once told me that at the time, he was not even familiar with such terms as Brahman and Atman. He had not the support of any of the accepted theses on the subject. The inquiry was his own, and the way he discovered was equally his own. He discovered much later that he had come to the same conclusion that scriptures and the experience of others in the same line had arrived at from time immemorial. Later on in life, when he came into contact with such classical texts as Drig Drishya Viveka, he instinctively found there was a family likeness to the psychological, or rather trans-psychological way that he himself had followed. As Maharshi plunged into the depths of his soul during his analysis of who am I, he got beyond the plane of doubt, for he had transcended the limitations set by the intellectualizing character of the mind that never permits that disjunction with the name form complex, which is the field of empirical experience. His method has much in common with that of Lord Buddha. When Mulunkya asked Buddha questions that did not touch the vital issue involved, that of suffering, the latter replied that one pierced by an arrow would be interested only in plucking it out, and not in discussing of what substance it was made, whether it had a poison tip, etc. One does not find in Maharshi the type of bhakti associated with devotional forms. But it can be said that if the way of bhakti brings one to the expression of bounty and love towards all, he is that. His very nature is imbued with love. I should not omit to mention here a scene that I myself had witnessed. At my request, he recited certain lines from the composition of the saint Manikavachakar, where the poet speaks of the condition of the soul melted in love. Hardly had the Maharshi pronounced a few lines when there was a brilliance in his face. He who rarely expresses in any outward form this inner emotion could not restrain a few silent tears. A slanting ray of the morning sun from the hillside made the scene still more vivid. A peace that passeth all understanding pervaded the whole atmosphere. For more than an hour, there was perfect silence. On one occasion, Maharshi told me that what he realized on the first day when he made inquiry has ever remained with him, and has neither increased nor decreased. When I asked him why he came all the way to Tiruvannamalai and why he underwent so many hardships, which we would characterize as sadhana or quest, he only waved his hand, implying, "I don't know why all that happened." Our inquiring minds, want explanations and are easily satisfied with some such fiction as destiny or prarabdha, which do not exist for the jnani. For it is said that the three karmas of the person who realizes brahma jnana are all dissolved at one stroke. From the point of view of the Ramana Maharshi, it must be so. What impressed me most in reading the characteristics of the Jiva Mukta, realized while still alive, in Viveka Chudamani, were the lines, "He has his mind merged in Brahman, nevertheless he is quite alert but free from the characteristics of the waking state." While staying a few days with the Maharshi, these lines often came to my mind. To all outward appearance, he very often looked as if he were unconscious. But his mind was ever in such a state of concentration that even during the moments when he appeared to be inert, he knew all that was going on in the hall. Once in repeating verses from the Ribbu Gita, old Ten Amma made a certain error in pronunciation, and opening his eyes, he gently corrected her. In Drig Drishya Viveka, in verse 30, there is a fine account of the concentration of a man of realization. Quote, with the disappearance of attachment to the body, and with the realization of the Supreme Self, one experiences samadhi to whatever object the mind is directed. Unquote. We often hear it said that many of the devotees of the Maharshi saw him in a state of ecstasy. I do not contradict their interpretation of Maharshi as they saw him. I would like here only to give a certain Vedantic background to his attainment of the Sahaja state, which I think should not be interpreted in terms of ecstasy. Ecstasy is a religious experience. Ecstasy is attained in the spiritual union with the Godhead. Union is possible only when a difference is conceded between the units that afterwards enter into relation. But the Sahaja state is the natural state of the self, when all the superimpositions have been thrown away. That is, in the language of the Gita, when one becomes satisfied in the self alone by the self. Let us see what Shankara has to say with regard to this topic. In the case of a jnani, the text, quote, he is merged in Brahman, unquote, as in the mantra of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, should be interpreted according to Shankara in a figurative sense. In commenting on the passage, he concludes by saying, therefore, the Atman by itself has no difference due to bondage or liberation, knowledge or ignorance, for it is admitted to be always the same and homogeneous by nature. From the above statements, we should understand that the state of Sahaja cannot be equated with the union attained in any particular mystic condition. Whatever may be the mystic value of these transcendental states described in the ecstasies, a jnani, not denying, of course, the possibility of these states, remains completely detached from them. For he knows that every mode of experience, material or mystic, is the same manifestation of Atman. And in every aspect of manifestation, it is the same Brahman in action. His mind does not yearn for any special kind of experience. He has nothing to achieve, nor has he anything to be achieved through others. He is the person in whom there will be no tendency at all to proselytize. He has no mission to achieve. According to Shankara in the Nirvana Ashtaka, he alone can say, I have no death or fear, no distinction of rank or class. I have no father, no mother, no friend, no master, nor disciple. Quote, note, the Maharshi did indeed sometimes say that he had no disciples. Yet he gave instructions and guidance as a guru does to disciples. It is for those who can to understand. I am the absolute knowledge and bliss. I am the all-pervading self. In the presence of the Maharshi, this is indeed the impression that a seeker of the Vedantic tradition gets. Silent Influence by Acharya Swami. It is 28 years since I first visited Sri Ramanashrama. The moment I entered the meditation hall and found myself face to face with Bhagavan, I felt a thrill at heart, the impression of which is still fresh in my memory. I could at once feel that here was a saint and sage of childlike simplicity, perfect renunciation, and tremendous spiritual power. Subsequently, I paid a number of visits to that sacred place, and every time I returned greatly benefited. His teaching of self-knowledge was in the direct tradition of the great Shankara, but he showed regard and appreciation for all paths and even for all religions and their founders and scriptures. As a result, followers of various religions were drawn to him from many parts of the world. Bhagavan was a teacher of few words. Sometimes he might explain in words, but it was his piercing gaze and tremendous silence that made the greatest impact. Bhagavan's Writing by T.K. Sundarasa Iyer. To be still and know that I am that I am is the essence of Bhagavan's teaching. He wrote little, and what he did was nearly all at somebody's request. The marital garland of letters to Sri Arunachala, the first and foremost of the five hymns of Sri Arunachala, appeared in response to the request of his sadhu devotees in the days when they used to go around begging for food before there was an ashram. They used to walk around singing spiritual songs, and the householders would give them food liberally, knowing that it was to be shared with Sri Bhagavan. Knowing this, a few unscrupulous beggars used to pose as Ramana Bhaktas and also go around singing. On account of this, his Bhaktas asked Bhagavan to make a special song for them to sing. At first he did not respond to their request. But sometime later, while they were walking around the hill, the 108 exquisite, profound verses sprang forth from him spontaneously as a marriage garland for Sri Arunachala. They are the outpouring of a pining soul to its divine lover. They still remain the solace and delight of its devotees. Next came the Navamani Mole, nine gems. These were born on different occasions, but were later strung together like jewels on a string. The first of them explains the dance of the motionless Arunachala, while the second equates the term Arunachala with Satchitananda. Here is a strange thing. While at other holy centers, the Shakti dances while Shiva looks on, here the display of the mother's activity ceases, emerges in Shiva, while he dances at Arunachala. The Dasaka and Ashtaka, the 10 and the 8 verses which come next, are a group by themselves. The former begins with the word Karunayal, by thy grace. This word kept ringing in Bhagavan's ears, he said. Several times he shook it away, asking what he had to do with it. But still it came back until at last he uttered it. The stream thus started, flowed on until the ten superb verses of the hymn had been written. Bhagavan then thought that the flow had worked itself out. But it still continued, although in a different form and with different contents, until it had built up the Ashtaka as well. While the Dasaka was more an appeal for divine grace, the Ashtaka is a superb and full explanation of the significance of Arunachala, the Absolute Being Conscious Bliss, which as the I of our being, transforms itself into all that is. It also shows the way back to the source, to that state of being, which is Supreme Peace. The Arunachala Pancharatna, or five verses to Arunachala, the last of the series, was first composed by Sri Bhagavan in Sanskrit, and then translated by him into Tamil. He first casually composed the first stanza. Long afterwards, someone showed it to Kavyakanta, Ganapati Sastri, who urged him to write four more, so that the first would be benedictory, the second on the divine, and the next three on the three paths of jnana, yoga, and bhakti. Thus, the five gem-like verses comprise a complete treatise in themselves. The Uladu Narapadu, 40 verses on reality, and their supplement, a second 40, were written on various occasions, this time under the urging of the poet Muruganar, and later strung together in a sequence. These were the less devotional, more philosophical work of Bhagavan. The Upadesaram, instruction in 30 verses, was also written on the request of Muruganar. As long ago as 1927, such of Bhagavan's works as were already written were put together as collected works in the original Tamil. The pundits sitting in the presence of Bhagavan were talking about the need for a preface to it, all agreeing that one was needed, but none undertaking to write it, each one excusing himself and saying that he was not qualified for the task. This went on for some time, each one proposing someone else for the task, and that one declining, while Bhagavan sat and watched without saying anything. Later in the evening, I was passing by the hall when Bhagavan looked at me and said, "Why don't you write the preface?" I was taken aback at the suggestion. I would venture to, if I had Bhagavan's blessing for the task, I said. Bhagavan said, "Write it, and it will come out all right."
Who's writing the article, that is?
TKS.
TKS, somebody said.
So I began writing at the dead of night, and to my great surprise, within 3/4 of an hour, had got it written out as though driven by some higher power. I changed not a word or comma of it, and at 2:00 in the morning took it into the hall and placed it at the feet of Bhagavan. He was pleased with the arrangement of the contents and the simplicity of style. He passed it as satisfactory and asked me to take it away. But when I had taken up the sheets of paper and gone only a few steps, he called me back to show him it again. I had ended up by saying, it is to be hoped that this work in the form of Bhagavan's grace will give all who aspire to eternal truth liberation through gaining the supreme bliss by the removal of all misery." Bhagavan said, "Why have you written, it is hoped? Why not say, it is certain?" So saying, he took the paper with his own hands and changed Nambukiran. How do you say it? Nambukiran?
Nambukiran. I believe.
To Tinnam.
Hmm?
To Tinnam. Tinnam. No. Tinnam. Into Tinnam
means... We should hope.
T-I-N-N-A-M. Tinnam.
Tinnam is
so saying
outside,
he,
you know.
He took the paper and with his own hand changed Nambukiran into Tinnam. Thus he...
Dinam.
Dinam.
Daily.
And thus did he set the seal of his approval on the book, giving it to his devotees as a charter of liberation in the form of his teaching, Upadesha, which leaves no trace of doubt in the mind. A quote from V.V. Giri, Governor of Mysore State. I had the pleasure of paying my respects to Ramana Maharshi in 1946 when I was a minister of the Madras government. He was a great inspiration to me, and I can never forget my visit to him. No wonder that the world remembers him even after his demise. May his memory live forever in the hearts of many of his devotees. An impression of the Maharshi by Sri Ramana, Maharshi Sri Ramana by Swami Muktananda.
That's the one you
said. Yeah. Bhagavati's Guru. In our issue of April 1965, we had an article about the strange miracle working of Saint Swami Nityananda. Swami Muktananda was his disciple and is now his successor. In this article, he tells us of the impression made on him by a brief visit that he paid to Sri Ramana Maharshi. Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi was a great saint who always occupied a high place of reverence in the minds of people. His divine personality endeared him to all beings. The word Ramana means one who plays. You may call him Aman or Guru, both are synonymous, indicating the same divine power of which this universe is a game. Maharshi Ramana was a divine soul, completely detached beyond all differences, highly self-restrained and playfully living in the ocean of transcendental consciousness. I had the good fortune to be in his company just for 3 days. Even during that short stay, I found that anyone entering his presence, even for a moment, would experience a state of mental peace free from all thoughts. This showed that he was a fully realized soul in a transcendental state, beyond all thoughts. Some believe him to be a siddha or great saint, and some believe him to be an incarnation of God. From the Vedantic point of view, all are one in essence. God himself appears in the world as Siddha. So Siddha is God, and he is the entire universe. Therefore, everything is the manifestation of Bhagavan Ramana, the spirit at play. Anyone going even once to Maharshi Ramana felt as if the Maharshi belonged to him. This was because he really belonged to everyone and everyone to him. Wearing only a loincloth, he used to sit relaxed on a sofa. But still he looked more attractive than even the most richly attired princes because, as my Reverend Guru Dev Nityananda used to say, Maharshi Ramana was beyond body consciousness, beyond all attributes and beyond the dualities. This indicates that he was on a plane far above bodily pain and pleasure, a plane inaccessible to ordinary mortals. Realization of the self was all important in his teaching. To everyone who asked, he unhesitatingly gave the advice to meditate on the self, worship the self, and know the self. This is because, according to Vedanta, there is nothing worth knowing, hearing, or seeing except one's true self. One who was and is Ramana is this eternal truth beyond all time, having neither beginning nor end. Therefore, the path in quest of truth shown by him will remain accessible to all for a long time to come. Because he proclaimed absolute truth, which remains unobstructed at all times, in all places, and under all conditions. His message appears to some the oldest among the old, to others the newest of the new. Actually, it is ancient and modern at the same time, because the concepts of the old and new are imposed on the self by others, while it is really ageless and eternal. Some people call the present time a new age, but according to the Maharshi, all things, old and new, are projections of the same eternal truth. Those who love the Maharshi got for him the true supreme bliss attained by means of jnana, yoga, and bhakti. This means that from him one got the essence of all spiritual practices. That is why I call him one who plays Ramete iti Ramana. He is the ever adorable great soul. My adoration to him. M.S. Kamat by Sen. This seems a fitting occasion to remember one of the older devotees who has long since passed away. M.S. Kamat was editor of the Madras Sunday Times, which in his day stood in a very high level and was widely respected. This short piece is by Sen, S-E-I-N. That's another Arthur Osborne's.
Pen name.
Another one, yeah. He used it particularly for disseminating spiritual teaching, and in the first place, for making the Maharshi and his teaching more widely known. He was a man who loved service. People saw him participating in the traditional feeding of the poor that took place at the ashram, and still does, on the Jayanti, birth anniversary of Bhagavan, remarked on the devotion and sincerity he showed in serving them. While in Madras, he was always ready to help with ashram work, and especially with the still infant publication department. The ashram would write to him for any of the needs, and he would immediately attend to it by sending one of his sub-editors to do so, giving a priority over his own professional work. People even used to joke about it at the ashram, saying that if you wrote to him for a new broomstick, costing an anna or so, he would delegate a sub-editor for the job and lend his car and go to any expense to see that it reached the ashram the same day. He served Bhagavan and his disciples wholeheartedly and unreservedly. Bhagavan appreciated his spirit of devotion. When informed of his death, he actually shed tears and said in a voice choking with emotion, "So, Kamat is gone. Where now shall we find anyone who will serve us with such sincerity and dedication?" You know that one book, I think Sri Maharshi, 111 Illustrations, he put that together. And another one by Sen. Sivarama Reddiar. I should like to say a little more about Sivarama Reddiar, whose obituary appeared in our previous issue. Devotees and visitors who bought books at the ashram bookstall over the years must have noticed the grave, silent, reserved man in attendance there. A few minutes talk with him was enough to convince one of his unshakable faith in Bhagavan. I knew that he was well versed in Advaita, so I asked him once whether he had any doubt in it. He said, for nearly 20 years, I had a haunting doubt, but it was dispelled by a few words from Bhagavan. He then told me his story. His whole family were disciples of the saint Achyuta Swami of Polur, who had visited Bhagavan as far back as 1900, and instantly recognized his supreme station and told his disciples about it. Reddy Air was initiated by one of the disciples of Sri Achyuta Swami into Taraka Mantra and Shad Mukti Upasana, that is, shutting the six doorways of the head and seeing a light between the eyebrows. He practiced this for nearly 10 years, sometimes in solitude and sometimes in the family. The result was that he was surrounded by brilliant light and had a feeling of exhilaration. Nevertheless, he still had a doubt about the reality of the state. In 1934, by which time he was already settled at Bhagavan's ashram, he asked Bhagavan about it. Bhagavan said, yes, that is the state of Nididhyasana. You heard the Guru instruct you. You assimilated his teaching. And now you experience it. But this is still on the level of the Triputi, the threefold reality of seer, sight, seen. You have to go beyond that and find out who is the I that experiences this light and exhilaration. They only exist for him. Who is he? Even before this, I had known in theory about transcending the Triputi, Reddier declared, but only now did I grasp it as a practical policy and try to put it into practice. And from this moment, all doubts disappeared. I took this explanation as my final initiation. From then on, I had no more doubts. From then on, it became real bliss. Seeing him, one could well believe it. Quote from Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi, who am I? Ask yourself the question. The body, Anamaya Kosha, and its functions are not I. Going deeper, the mind, Manomaya Kosha, and its functions are not I. The next step takes one to the question, where do these thoughts arise? The thoughts may be spontaneous, superficial, or analytical. They operate in the mind. Then who is aware of them? The existence of thoughts, their clear conception and operation become evident to the individual. This analysis leads to the conclusion that the individuality is operative as a cognizer of the existence of thoughts and their sequence. This individuality is the ego, or, as people say, I. Vijnanamaya Kosha, intellect, is only the sheath of the I, and not the I itself. Inquiring further, the questions arise, who is this I? Where from does it come? I was not aware in sleep. Simultaneously with the rise, with its rise, sleep changes to dream and wakefulness. But I am not concerned with them, the state right, with the dream state just now. Who am I now in the wakeful state? If I originated on waking from sleep, then the I was covered up with ignorance. Such an ignorant I cannot be what the scriptures refer to as the wise affirm. I am beyond even sleep. I must be here and now. I must be what I was all along in sleep and dream also, unaffected by the qualities of these states. I must therefore be the unqualified substratum underlying these three states after Anamaya Kosha is transcended.
Only you and I are registered. Nobody else. She wants to know who's coming.
In your van. I told her, you know, we had a conference call here.
To go where?
Florida.
Tampa.
Oh.
I told her. I don't know. Going?
When is the 19th?
29th. To the 1st.
Okay.
So.
Driving all the way?
Yeah, driving down.
Okay.
She wants to know so that she can tell her.
There's 37 people registered so far.
Happened to the driver.
Yeah, I don't know what will happen then. If I register now, I mean, it's a confirmation that I'm going. I don't know what's going to happen in December.
Yeah.
Are you stopping in Raleigh?
Somewhere.
We went down to the southern part of North Carolina the one time, right? Right near the border.
One stop we have to make.
Like 10 hours, 10 hours, right? I think they felt like 10 hours and 10 hours. First day, 10 hours, I think.
Margo's not going. Who went last year from you? Who went?
Tony.
Oh, maybe Tony will go for some.
Even Bina went. Bina, but she came by playing Bina.
Last year it didn't come. No. The
year before last. Did Gita go?
Gita, yeah. She flew though.
Yeah. I flew also, but I went early. I don't have to go early this time.
When are we starting?
26? Well, we can arrive on Saturday, spend the night, and Sunday afternoon it starts, you know.
So we'll start from here 27th or 26th?
Let's have it and get there 28th.